We welcome back a friend to the show. He is a very talented actor and has a great blog about the Beatles that he's had for many years called The Beatles in Mark's Life. We are pleased to be joined by Mark Cartier. Hello there, Mark.
Hi, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. You're loud and clear now. Sounds great.
Oh, yeah. It depends which side of the head I put the phone on, you know?
Now, are you a left-headed or a right-headed talker?
See, I'm usually a left-handed talker, but it's not working there. By the way, I'm not calling you from a drive-through, so at least I'm in my own house. I can tell you that.
I appreciate that very much. By the way, and I know you don't like to make a thing out of it, but we can hear a happy belated birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, get a lot of birthday wishes. I can't even respond to all of them. It's just overwhelming. It's cool.
Well, that's what happens when you're a celebrity and a beloved actor and humanitarian like yourself.
Oh, gosh. I'm blushing now.
Well, it is a week from today that we get to see this documentary that we've been hearing about that seems like forever. What do you think so far of what you've seen of the trailers for Get Back from Peter Jackson?
What I've seen is really exciting. I mean, he's been teasing us with this, like you say, for a couple of years now. And what really impresses me the most in looking at these is the picture quality is amazing.
Yes.
I remember seeing the original Let It Be movie in a movie theater when it came out, and it was grainy and dark and really hard to see. And Peter Jackson has cleaned this up, so it just looks pristine. I mean, it looks like they just shot this yesterday. It's fantastic.
And, I saw Let It Be when it came out, but I don't have a great memory of it, and I think my memory has been influenced by the public perception, which is that this was a film about a band that was breaking up and couldn't stand each other anymore. And what Peter Jackson has said with his film is that, well, that's not really the story. And I even saw a comment last week from Michael Lindsay Hoag, who made Let It Be, that he said, well, that's really not what the original was about either. There were moments of friendship and levity and fun, but there were also some of the arguments and disagreements in there too.
Yeah, and like you, I really have a very dim memory of the movie because I only saw it once when it came out. Aside from clips that I've seen on the internet over the years, they have not made it available all these years. So I don't remember a lot of it except the rooftop concert, which you see a lot of. But I guess there was a lot of that stuff in there. I just don't remember it. Part of the reason I think it was so dark, too, was because it really wasn't made to be a theatrical film. It was really supposed to be a television documentary about the making of the album. So it was shot on 16 millimeter, and they blew it up to 35 when they decided we're going to make a feature film out of it. And so that's why I think the original has such a grainy quality to it, you know?
So, Mark, can you recap the backstory of what was going on? They wanted to do a concert for the first time since 1966. All kinds of discussions about where they might do such a thing. And so, what was the thought process as they gathered to put this all together?
Well, McCartney, of course, was like the driving force, as he was for a lot of their projects at this point. And he really did want them to get back to their roots and play live. And so they were going to do, like you say, a concert. They couldn't figure out where to have it, but they knew that they only had about 3 or 4 weeks to do this entire project because Ringo was soon to start filming the film The Magic Christian with Peter Sellers. So they only had the month of January to do this, and they had to write new songs. The idea was that this concert would be all new material, which is a very bold thing to do, really, instead of going out and playing your greatest hits. So they had to come up with all of this material. So they went into Twickenham Film Studios to start rehearsing a batch of new songs. Paul had a lot written. George actually had a lot written. John didn't have much as they started these sessions. And so it took them a long time to start developing what they thought would be a live performance. With no overdubs, it wasn't going to be like their recent albums, like Sgt. Pepper or the White Album, even. And so they put a lot of constraints on themselves in a very short time period, and that may be why some of the tempers started to flare as the project went on.
And along with all that time pressure they were dealing with, being, as you mentioned, on that unnatural turf of Twickenham Studios, which from the film that we've seen from that footage just looks so sparse and uninviting.
Yeah, all they had was like a big psych in the background, and they put some colored lights on it. But they're in this big, dark, cavernous film studio in January. It's cold. They have to show up early in the morning because the film crew has different hours than the Beatles normally would be recording at night. So they have to show up early in the morning and start playing these songs with cameras all around them, filming them. And they started to feel the pressure as the thing went on, until, of course, the famous little blow-up with George and Paul about 8 or 10 days into the project, at which point George just walked out of the sessions. And that was essentially the end of the Twickenham part of the story.
Yeah, then they go back to the more familiar territory at what we now know as Abbey Road. And things took on a different feel when they were there. And it seems like when they're there, that's when we see these guys going back to what made it successful in the first place.
Yeah, but actually, you know, it wasn't Abbey Road that they went to. They went to their Apple building.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
They had a new studio built in the basement of the Apple building. And it wasn't even ready yet. This guy, Magic Alex, had promised them like 95 tracks and something absurd, and like force fields to dampen the sound between the instruments and all these ridiculous promises. And their longtime producer, George Martin, actually had to bring in some remote equipment to make the studio usable. But once they got in there, that's when things really started to cook, like you say, especially once George brought Billy Preston into the sessions.
Yeah, and they mentioned that a little bit, they mentioned it on the 60 Minutes piece the other night on the documentary, that Billy Preston changed the whole temperature of that room when he showed up.
Yeah, it was like when George had brought Eric Clapton in the previous year to play on While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Suddenly the guys all start behaving themselves because there's another professional in the room. And also Preston brings something that they don't have. All of the Beatles could play keyboard. Even Ringo could sit down and hammer out a basic tune on a piano. But none of them, not even Paul, could play keyboards the way that Billy Preston could. He was just a remarkable player. And he was also like a ray of sunshine in the room. And so they kind of like rally around him. And the songs, everything becomes really more productive at that point in the session.
Now, whose idea was it to go up on the roof?
It was kind of a group discussion. They knew that they weren't going to have this big, grand performance that they had originally envisioned. They'd talked about an amphitheater in North Africa. They talked about doing on an ocean liner in the middle of the Mediterranean. And suddenly, Michael Lindsay Hogg, that original director, said, "We need a concert. Where are we going to do it?" And somebody suggested the roof. I'm not exactly sure who. And even up to the last minute, a couple of them did not want to do it. But once all the equipment was set up on that cold January day, January 30th, 1969, they all went up there and they delivered. They played a great set, especially John and Paul really come alive. Even though they can't see most of the people they're playing for, you can see that they're just having a blast up there.
Absolutely. And while many have said it's the album, as we mentioned, of a band breaking up, but it's some of their best work together. We see it up on the roof. We see it in the studio with them working out the details on Two of Us.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, great song. A song that people often think is about John and Paul. You can really take it that way. But Paul really wrote this song about himself and his new girlfriend, soon-to-be wife, Linda Eastman. And they sing it as a duet. I think it's probably the second best duet they ever sang.
Mm-hmm.
My personal favorite is If I Fell from A Hard Day's Night. But they sing Two of Us together, and it's just a beautiful blend of voices. They were big fans of the Everly Brothers. They fashioned themselves after those guys. And this is like the closest they probably ever got to that.
We're talking with Mark Cartier here on Downtown about Get Back, the new Peter Jackson documentary on the Beatles, a three-parter that drops next weekend on Disney Plus, whatever streaming service that is. I think what I'm most excited about that I've seen from the trailer are those moments of levity, the guys laughing and having fun. Even the little clip I saw of Linda Eastman and Yoko laughing together, it changes your perception of what was going on at that time.
Yeah. They seem to be having a great time themselves. It's really nice to see. Linda's daughter, of course, playing around with John in the studio. She was very young. I think Heather was her name. Is fun to watch. And even there's a great shot that I see of Billy Preston walking into the studio while the other guys are playing, and he just starts a little dance as he's on his way over to his keyboard. It's just so cool.
Yeah, and
John, of course, always goofed for the camera. I mean, he was a natural. McCartney's a big ham, so they have a good time. Even though the tensions may have been underlying a lot of what was going on, you can see that they were having fun.
Well, and I saw something the other day from McCartney that he's seen the movie, the finished product, and he said it even changes his perception of what the end of the band was like.
Wow, that's cool. That's really neat. I'm sure Ringo probably will think the same thing when he sees it. It probably brings up a lot of memories that they had buried or forgotten, because you say there has been this perception of the Let It Be movie for many years about how it was such a dark period. And even many of their quotes soon after were like that. But it couldn't have all been doom and gloom, because they came up with some great material. Particularly McCartney. I mean, Let It Be, The Long and Winding Road, Get Back, Two of Us that you mentioned. Those four songs alone are just tremendous. And Lennon comes up with a great one called Don't Let Me Down that they sing.
Mm.
They revive an oldie of theirs called One After 909, which is an old rocker, which is fantastic. And then Lennon and McCartney actually had a true collaboration. I've Got a Feeling. Half the song was written by Paul, and then Lennon attached a piece that he'd written, and they sing it together at the end in tandem. It's great.
Well, it's going to be a wonderful moment for Beatles fans. I can't wait to see it next week, and we'll have to put our heads together and compare notes once we've both seen this thing. You need to get that Disney Plus subscription, I guess, Mark.
I know. That's the thing. They're forcing you into getting this. I was kind of disappointed initially when they said it wasn't going to be a theatrical movie. But Peter Jackson said he had so much material that he was going to make it a three-parter. I guess he has to make everything he touches into a trilogy. And so it's a three-part thing, I guess. And on the other hand, it's going to be great to see all this additional footage, at least for those of us who are Beatles junkies.
Yeah.
I don't know how much other people are going to love it, but I know we will.
Oh, yeah, no question. Have you seen any of McCartney's book yet?
I haven't seen the book. But there's so much other stuff that's been going on. I really loved his program earlier in the year, McCartney 321.
Yes.
That he did with what's that producer, Rick Rubin?
Yeah, wasn't that great?
It was fantastic, where they just sit there and they talk about the songs and they play segments of them and break it down. And it was just a real great appreciation of what was going on. And Rick really focused on McCartney's bass playing and how innovative it was. It was really a tremendously well put together production.
Yeah, and what was nice about that, there were clearly some things that caught McCartney by surprise.
Oh yeah, and you know, it's one of those deals where they're at the mixing board, they've got the original tapes, and sometimes they'll bring up a fader, and it's something that's still on the track, but it's not on the record.
Mm.
So they're going, what were we doing here? He goes, I don't know. I'm glad it didn't make it into the finished product, but it's interesting. It's interesting.
Well, it's great. It's going to make for a fun Thanksgiving weekend for us Beatles fans. So I'm looking forward to it. Mark, I know you will. We'll compare notes later on. But thanks so much for coming on to talk with us about it this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure. You have so much knowledge about the Beatles yourself. I don't think you give yourself enough credit. You're as big a fan as I am. So it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. Mark, good talking with you, my friend. Be well. I hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Same to you and yours, Rich. Take care.
See you, Mark. Mark Cartier with us on Downtown. Again, check out his blog, too, The Beatles in Mark's Life, out there on Blogspot.